The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
How does 11 tonnes a hectare of tasty Lincolnshire oats sound?
We were quite surprised when we saw the yield and sort of thing. I'd intimated to the combine driver who was looking for 7 to 8.
We've a new gizmo to keep your tractor on the straight and narrow.
It controls a hydraulic valve, and that in turn controls the steering system on your tractor or combine or whatever, and will steer it down the field in whatever shape you want.
And we're talking to the leaders of a new environmental farmers group that's come to Lincolnshire. Plus, of course, the news, weather and the markets.
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
A very good morning. I'm Steve Orchard. 11 tonnes a hectare. Incredible. We'll head to Nettleham and find out how they did it after a look at this week's farming news. And there's more changes to SFI, including the inclusion of more options that will be subject to a 25% cap. There's new capital grants, for example, £5.40 to plant an agroforestry woodland tree, £17.83 for a fruit tree, £1,268 to develop an agroforestry plan, and £918 for a moorland mapping plan. As ever, there's loads more detail on the DEFRA website. The UK's self-sufficiency in fresh vegetables has hit a new low, just 53%, and imports make up 84% of fresh tomatoes. The NFU's calling for numerous measures for the new government to take to protect UK food security, including a multi-year agriculture budget and a statutory commitment to ensure the UK's self-sufficiency doesn't fall any further. A bit of good news on connectivity. More than 300,000 rural homes and businesses are to receive major internet speed upgrades as part of the government's £800 million Project Gigabit to modernise broadband infrastructure in the country. Let's hope they can do the same for 5G. Now, what's your usual spring oats yield? 6 to 8 tonnes a hectare sound reasonable? One Lincolnshire farmer has just harvested with a yield of 11 tonnes a hectare. He's Mark Popplewell from Nettleham, along with agronomist Stuart McDowell, growing Cope Seeds Merlin variety. So I popped along to see how he did it. First, Mark, tell us about the soil.
Quite shallow, the soil. Some of it is a little bit heavier and deeper bodied, but a lot of it's quite shallow. It was destined to come in with wheat, but obviously due to the wet times we had, we couldn't get it drilled, so we chose to put oats in here, due to mainly that we didn't want too much spring barley spread across the farm, and looking to get, you know, maximise the first year wheat again in the following year. So we chose to go with the oats on the whole of the farm. So we've 320 hectares in this year at Nettleham.
Okay, and when did you plant and how did you plant?
So we had varying ways that we planted, actually. Again, due to the wet time, it was the first farm we drilled. There was drilled around the 2nd of April. We had three drilling methods. We drilled some conventionally with our Vardastat drill. We drilled some with the Tyne drill. And we also drilled some with a direct drill, but all the land did get cultivated, so there wasn't drilled directly.
And when did you harvest?
We started harvesting on Monday this week. The main issue we've got is that the straw is quite green, so we're struggling with the straw not being ripe, but the crop is very ripe, and we're coming in at around 11% moisture.
And 11 tonnes a hectare, that's quite incredible, really, isn't it?
Yeah. It's. We was quite surprised when we saw the yield and sort of thing. I'd intimated to the combine driver who was looking for 7 to 8, so when he rung me and said 11, we obviously thought there was a bit of an issue, but we knew the combine weigher was okay because we'd pre-checked it starting the oats. We put it in our lorry, checked it on the lorry, and yeah, the weigher looked okay. Took it back to our verified weigh bridge and we was in 300 kilos, so we was pretty sure.
So you have actually checked the scales.
Yeah,
and they
so we've checked them three ways.
From an agronomy point of view then, what have you done to this crop while it was growing?
They've not been a bad crop to look after, to be fair. Oats don't tend to have that many inputs. We gave it a T1 fungicide and a T2 fungicide, but actually disease levels were fairly low. We've put a lot of nutrition on it because of the bad autumn that we had, and we didn't get a lot of winter crops in. When we looked at these oats early on and they looked to be a really good crop, we decided to invest in them with nutrition, and so they've had a good nutrition program, which I think has helped. But other than that, just your standard broadleaf weed sprays and a couple of PGRs to keep them stood up.
Can we put any of this down to the weather? Because it's been a bit of an oddball this year, really, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's definitely been an oddball. I mean, it's been a horrendous year, really, in some respects, but in others, actually, the weather in the spring with the rain that we kept getting just kept these crops growing, kept them green, and certainly the spring weather has helped these crops.
And the warmer weather recently helped fatten them up a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I was concerned early doors because early June there it was quite dull. We're all crossing our fingers for a bit more sunshine, but it's done its job, thankfully.
So it's been a very nice economical crop for you this year, Mark.
Yeah, the oats will stack up well for us, sort of thing. We're very pleased. We was looking for something to replace the oilseed rape, so hopefully we'll be going forward with some more oats and see how we go.
Tom Siswick from Cope Seeds, let's bring you in now. What seed variety was used here?
Merlin is a spring milling oat. It was brought to the UK sort of 7 years ago. We entered it into RL trials, NL and RL trials. And it performed really well. It performs well in treated and untreated situations. It's got a high disease profile. It's got a really good yield as well. It has been on the recommended list for a couple of years now, so it is great, gaining a bit of traction. It's also a particularly good break crop for farmers as well. It's kind of an interesting one, really, especially in the season that we've just had, being particularly challenging with the weather. To see Mark achieve sort of yields of 11 tonnes is just completely unheard of. And, you know, it's a testament to really what Mark's doing here. So it's absolutely fantastic news for us.
But clearly the seed itself is effective, because you've got to start with it. I know you've got to have good soil, you've got to have the right weather, you've got to treat it right and so on. But is this seed achieving these kind of results elsewhere?
It achieves good results across the board, but this particular situation, it must be down to either the agronomy, the farm, or particularly the weather. I mean, wet weather has helped with grain fill and things like that, so hopefully that's something that's sort of attributed to it. But we know from sort of the last sort of 7 years that Merlin has produced some really good yields, and also it's doing really well up here, which is fantastic news, especially for the local people of Lincolnshire as well.
Absolutely. And getting in touch with Guinness Book of Records?
We have tried, but I think it's a little bit late now to be sort of getting them across here. But we might look again maybe this time next year as well. So hopefully.
Any new varieties? Anything new from Cope on the horizon, or newly available for the season coming up?
Yes, so we've got a few things in the pipeline. We've also got some historic things as well. So we have our own German e-wheat, which is called Nelson, which is a high nitrogen efficiency wheat. We see sort of high proteins with that. That's gained a lot of traction this year. We've got a spring wheat variety called Everlong, which is number one on the spring wheat recommended list as well. That's performed really well through trials and sort of our private trialing network as well, and hopefully that's going to gain a bit of traction this year as well.
Amazing results, and good to hear some positives in this weather ravaged year. If you want to talk to Cope Seeds, they're contactable at copeseeds.co.uk, and thanks to Tom Siswick, Mark Popperwell and agronomist Stuart McDowell. Now, for a new gizmo to talk about this week, on the market very soon at, it's claimed, a much cheaper price than the competition. It's a box to convert your tractor to auto steer. Nice straight tram lines and a potential pass-to-pass accuracy of just 2 centimetres. Charles Quick, farmer from Somerset, has come up with the idea and the actual kit. Charles, what problem are you trying to solve with this kit?
I mean, auto steer and RTK already exists. It's just really expensive. So I got frustrated with the prices. I couldn't afford one. So I thought, well, how hard can it be? I'll build my own. So I did. And now I've sort of got a few under my belt and I've got some experience and some knowledge. And I thought people were asking me to make them. So I thought I might as well start a business.
Now, you're talking about the price of just under £3,000. When you say they were too expensive, what kind of numbers are we talking about?
£12,000-£15,000, and you'd probably have a few unlock codes on top of that at £1,500 each.
That's a heck of a difference, isn't it? So let's go back to basics. For those who don't know, what does it actually do, this box of yours?
It controls a hydraulic valve, and that in turn controls the steering system on your tractor or combine or whatever, and will steer it down the field in whatever shape you want, be that a straight line or a curve or turning itself round at the end. It has a few outputs and inputs for things like section control, and in the future we're adding variable rate as well.
Now, when you say you can set it to go in a straight line or different patterns and so on, so there's obviously got to be some software attached to this.
That's right. What I make is the physical hardware that attaches to the tractor and physically controls the tractor. The software that's actually running the show and that you interact with is called Ag Open GPS, and it's completely free. There are about 1,000 farmers all over the world who are sort of contributing in various ways and testing, and we're all just essentially giving our contributions for free into this project so that we can all have this free, really cool software, and it's available for anyone who wants to use it.
And that presumably links to SatNav's GPS somehow.
Yeah, so the hardware will yeah listen to all of the satellite constellations. So you've got GPS, GLONASS, the Russian one, Beidou, the Chinese, and Galileo, which is the European constellation.
Okay, now as far as the hardware is concerned, what's installation like? Is this something that a farmer could typically do, or would it need a specialist?
Yeah, I think most farmers are pretty handy with a welder and a spanner, and that's all you need. So I send you the hydraulic valves, a complete wiring loom, and obviously all of the electronics, and all the connectors are unique, so you can't plug them in the wrong order. It all has to go together in one way. And then you just need to make a bracket to fit the steering angle sensor. So that goes along the steering ram. Make a bracket for the hydraulic valve itself. And then typically what I recommend people do is drive it into their local hydraulic shop and say, you know, make these hoses from here to here. And, you know, following the diagram that I provide. I think it's very much within the capabilities of almost every farmer.
And is it applicable to any tractor, or does it depend on the make or what the tractor is going to be used for, or the size and so on?
So, yeah, literally any tractor. As long as it's got hydraulics somewhere in the steering, then I can control it with a hydraulic valve. And if your tractor is steer ready, then it's even easier. You just literally plug into a diagnostic connector and you're away.
And when will this be available to buy then?
It's going to be available this autumn. I've still got a couple of outstanding things that I want to improve before I finally put it on sale. So I'm just testing those final hardware revisions, and then we're going to hit the ground running sort of from October onwards.
Are you sort of mechanically trained then, or are you mechanically minded, or is this just something that you had an interest in and there was a problem so you decided to solve it?
I am mechanically minded. I've grown up making sort of contraptions on the farm, but I've never been formally trained. Somehow I managed to get a job as a mechanic / vehicle operator for the British Antarctic Survey, which was pretty fun. A year in computer science when I studied at Nottingham, and that was really useful for the electronics and programming side of things. Mostly, I'd say I'm self-taught, because it's a very specialist area and you struggle to find anyone to actually teach you.
Charles, sounds like a brilliant idea. Well done, and let's hope you are hugely successful with it. Thanks for joining us on the Farming Programme this morning.
Thank you for having me. Cheers.
More information at cseq.co.uk. Now, if you're missing agronomy guru Sean Sparling, he's on holiday at the moment, but we'll be back with a look at the year so far next week, and then we're into the new season with his weekly crop reports and timely agronomy advice from the 1st of September. On the way next, a look at the markets, the weather for the week to come, and we chat with the leadership of a new environmental farmers group in North Lincolnshire that's got some big support.
The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
A new cooperative for environmentally friendly farmers is now in the area. The 10th Environmental Farmers Group to be established in the UK is looking for members in North Lincolnshire and has some big support. Agricultural machinery supplier Peacock and Binnington and law firm Wilkin Chapman. First, one of the founders, Digby Sowerby from Farming Forward. Tell us a bit about the group. What is its purpose?
Essentially, Environmental Farmers Group came about 2 years ago, incorporated 2 years ago. So down in the southern central England, there's a real concentration of farmer clusters, which is a concept that was created between farmers and the Game Wildlife Conservation Trust down in the south of England, which looked at bringing farmers together voluntarily around environmental projects. And so that farm cluster model has grown across England, and farm clusters now cover nearly 1 million hectares across the whole of the UK, all looking at environmental projects between farmers. farmers. Environmental Farmers Group really came about in the context of two changes. Firstly, we had the loss of basic payment scheme. Farmers in the GWCT were very wary about how that might take income away from these environmental projects. And then secondly, we had the emergence of natural capital markets. Essentially, the concept is that we need to value the environment alongside other things in society to be able to make sure that we don't destroy environmental resource.
Digby, just explain natural capital markets to somebody who might not know what they are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So natural capital is a concept where you value the environment. Generally, we split the natural capital market into two sections. Firstly, we have a statutory market, and secondly, we have a voluntary market. And so within the statutory market, this is where government has legislated that organisations must offset the impact that they have on the environment. So, for example, housing developers have to offset their impact on biodiversity under new legislation. So for every, you know, hectare of grassland they might destroy by building a new housing development, they have to find 110% of grassland or equivalent habitat elsewhere. In the voluntary markets, these are much more nascent. So at the moment, this revolves around two areas. Firstly, we have nature, and then we have carbon. And so carbon is a lot more known. We've had carbon around for many years now, and the markets have been a little bit spurious. But they're starting to get a lot more formality around the markets, with frameworks coming into place to reduce the amount of greenwashing that there is. And so we're looking at producing, you know, environmental baselines and how much carbon farmers are sequestering and how much carbon farmers are emitting to understand their position on net zero, and then offset for companies where farmers are already at net zero. And then from a nature perspective, many corporates are now having to report on their impact on nature. And this opens opportunities, again, for offsetting where companies aren't able to reduce their impact to be able to fund environmental projects off elsewhere.
OK, so what does the group actually do?
So the group does three things. So it's a cooperative group of farmers delivering environmental change on landscape scale funded through natural capital markets. There's two sides to that. Firstly, delivering environmental change on a landscape scale. So this is about connectedness of the environmental change, which is a key point when we're looking at the environment to do things in a connected way. And then secondly is the financial element. So it's making sure that this environmental change is properly funded. Firstly, so that it gets the engagement of the farmers, and secondly, so that it's sustainable in the long term. There are three main things EFG does. Firstly, it onboards new members. Scale is critical. Everything we do is about scale, because that is what the buyers want. They need scale to be able to deliver the environmental projects using the funds they have. And we share knowledge between members so everyone has a good understanding of the market. Secondly, we trade natural capital. So, of course, to provide the income to the farmers and to run the whole organisation, we trade natural capital. Environmental Farmers Group itself doesn't aim to make any profit. Anything is redistributed among members, just like any other cooperative organisation in that way. And then thirdly, we look at landscape scale environmental baselining. And here what we're trying to do is demonstrate the change that farmers are delivering over time. And we're right at the early days of this, but we're looking at measuring biodiversity, carbon and water on a landscape scale, using various methodologies and repeating that annually to demonstrate the change that's been delivered.
Okay, turning to partner organisation law firm Wilkin Chapman, Catherine Harris, what's your firm's involvement in all this?
Wilkin Chapman's listed, you know, we have a strong sector, huge amount of agricultural clients in Lincolnshire and beyond. And the group decided it's after some seed money to get this project going. And I think it's really exciting, it's innovative, and it gives the opportunity for farmers to cut out the middleman and have direct access to the schemes. I think that's so important with the reduction of BPS incomes and, you know, the changing environment. You know, we all know it's really, really challenging out there. And I don't know if you've seen, Steve, but the Labour government have announced a rapid review of the environmental improvement plan, and they are really looking at this very seriously in terms of, you know, declining nature And so it's very high up in the government's aims. It's in their minds. And also, you know, you asked earlier about what natural capital is. And I remember going to a talk, what, 5-6 years ago and thinking, you know, how can you make money out of a hedgerow? How does this actually translate? But actually, from what Digby's just explained, it is happening. It is about to be a massive opportunity for farmers. Also connected with that, I think farmers have got to work together to achieve this. Some of these projects are huge, and what the Northern group of the Farmers Group does is provide that cooperative framework to enable people to come along and get involved.
Okay, so you've explained EFG, the Environmental Farmers Group. You mentioned ESG. Felicia Lynch from Wilkin Chapman, what does that stand for?
Environmental, social and governance. And it's really looking about, you know, people's or companies' impacts, if you like, on the environment and in the social sphere, as well as then its governance. And I think what's interesting is that sometimes that can be sort of lost in translation for people, particularly because it came from the financial sector and now is being applied across the piece. And I really like how Digby summed it up. But, you know, if we think about it in terms of sustainability, then really we are looking at the social side, we're looking at the environment, and we're looking at the economic impact as well. And so I think that's, you know, where you get the phrase people, planet and profit, and people then are able to connect with that a little bit better. So for your listeners, that might be something that kind of helps them to say, oh, when they see people, planet and profit, they're talking about sustainability. And ESG is really just a framework, if you like, for how we measure how we're doing in terms of those impacts. And for us at Wilkin Chapman, we've actually, you know, really committed to this and going on that journey ourselves. And again, that's partly why, you know, being with the Environmental Farmers Group is of attraction to us, because we really want to support our clients through that journey as well as making that journey ourselves.
And Digby, the group in Northern Lincolnshire is open for business for new members now?
Yeah, so it's up and running. So we first started speaking to farmers in Northern Lincolnshire last year, and then we've begun onboarding members from April this year. We've kindly been sponsored by Peacock Binnington, as you mentioned, and Wilkin Chapman, and also Forrester Boyd now as well. And we've also managed to win two grant funds, one with Anglian Water and one with DEFRA. And to combine, we think that is now enough to hire someone locally within Lincolnshire to really accelerate the group, because we want to begin trading and begin getting these environmental projects delivered.
Okay, thank you, Digby, and Catherine and Felicia as well from Wilkin Chapman. Want to know more? Head to environmentalfarmersgroup.co.uk.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting as usual with livestock from Louth Market, but not as usual, Edward Middleton. He's on holiday. Welcome back, Henry Simpson. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. This week was a very hot week, which was perfect for harvesting. However, trade held strong despite a slight drop in national averages on last week. This week's prime cattle saw the prime steers an all-in average 282.5 pence per kilo, and the prime heifers all-in average 299 pence per kilo. Top of the day from the prime steers from F1 at Son of Biscothorpe with a limousine to 284 pence per kilo, or £1,621 per head. And the top in the heifers was from John Scully of Bournemouth with a British Blue to 308 pence per kilo, or £1,681 per head. Now moving on to sheep, the prime lambs this week saw an SQQ of 308 pence per kilo with an all-in average of 303 pence per kilo, or an all-in average pounds per head of £138.92. Top of this week's market was Carol Allison of Market Raisin to 352 pence per kilo, or Andrew Risdale of Tetney to £163 per head. Now moving on to cool ewes, just a smattering this week, but it was a much sharper trade, saw an average of £140.58 per head, with the top spot once again going to Andrew Risdale of Tetney to £205 per head. Just want to say a big thank you to everyone that supports the market week in, week out. That goes to all buyers, vendors and staff. This week, I want to say a special thank you to Keith Miller, who sat in for Edward Middleton as auctioneer. Next week is our store sale. We are taking entries for all prime and store cattle, as well as all entries for prime, cull and store sheep. So please don't hesitate to contact the team for all marketing options. It's been Henry Simpson from the Masons Rural Team. Thank you.
Thanks, Henry. And with the Grain Market Report, Open Fields, Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. As harvest moves on at pace in the UK, with most of what is fit having been combined already, we can now establish a few points. There are some good yield stories, but these are not the norm. Whilst we don't have an accurate picture, the general feeling is that wheat yields are circa 10 to 15% lower than the 5-year average. Quality is good though, good bushel weights and excellent hagbergs. Low protein in both the milling wheats and the feed wheats though. Winter barley, which was hoovered up some weeks ago, was to the most part disappointing. The early spring barley crops were the champagne crop, and the very early, later spring barleys are certainly acceptable, with almost all of them throwing low nitrogens. We still have a lot of the second harvest to come, with some still 2 to 3 weeks away. Should we be surprised by this? Probably not, but it's still disappointing when our fears are actually realised. We will all have a lot less to trade during the next 12 months. So too will the EU, with total wheat at its lowest since 2018. I've read reports though that France could see crop numbers not seen since the 1980s. If we skip across the Black Sea, we also know that crop export numbers will be smaller than last season too, with lower spring crop numbers and a poorer maize crop which will be harvested early autumn. But, for the moment at least, the US market is trying its best to beat us all up. Thursday evening brought around a loss of £6, with most of the downward pressure coming in the last hour of European trading, which coincided with the early trades in the US. The trading range that we have been working on for some time now, the 190 to 195 on NOV futures, had been decimated in one session, or 1 hour really, and we ticked down to an unrealistic, in my view, 182 at the end of the action. For the needle to move back in the right direction, I think we're going to need export numbers in the US to increase, and significantly. We need someone to turn on the buying tap. This would help move the big crop that is being forecasted in the States, but it would also change the sentiment and opinion of the funds who, as we know, can swing markets when they want to. I think I've probably depressed you all enough for 1 week. Let's hope for some good news and a bounce back up. So, some guide prices for this week, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, August 170 to 180, September 175 to 185, February 180 to 190, with Group 1 milling premium still holding £60 to £70. Feed barley, September 135 to 145, November 150 to 160. And finally, oilseed rape, September 370 to 380 and November 380 to 390. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Bit of heavy rain around late Monday, otherwise a mostly dry week with highs around 20, 21 Celsius and just light winds, mid-teens mph and mostly from the southwest. Next week, we'll take a look back at the year so far for crops and the markets and start to look forward to season 24-25. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.